You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This podcast is brought to you by IG, a global leader in online trading and authorized financial services provider. The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Tuesday, it's the double-header dream team of Nick Kunze from Sandon Private Wealth and also David Shapiro from Sasswin Securities, Deputy Chairman at that institution. And also this show, of course, incorporates the Tuesday trade, which I'm feeling, you know, fairly happy about at the moment. Nick, David is Googling something, apparently, so I'm going to start with you. This volatility is all over the place. I mean, we keep on saying it, and I don't want to bore people, but it's choppy in the extreme today.
Very, very choppy. And unless you're sitting in front of your screen, you'd look at the market today and say, oh, the top 40 has done 88 points, 0.18%. It hasn't been great. Six down day in a row. Couldn't be much happening, but it has been huge swings. I'll start with the Rand. I mean, the Rand's had probably almost a 2% swing two, three times during the session today, up and down. S&P 500 as well. Also sitting on the lows of the session, but this has also had close on about a 35, almost 40.1% swing three times since the opening up was three. So the last 90 minutes, it swung three times more than a percent either way. And the gold is now under 1900 just by a sniff, by a dollar, but it was at 1915 to almost 1918 about three times during our trading session, and it's bounced back to zero. So that's also at a percent swing. So, yeah, volatility really, I mean, as I said, maybe the end closing prices doesn't tell the story, but the intraday moves have been really wild.
And what does this tell you? We can throw up all the old familiar suspects, the usual suspects. We can talk about the Robin Hood Brigade, in other words, and I'm not singling out Robin Hood. I'm talking about the day traders. Is it the day traders? Is it algorithmic trading? Is it just a general thinness at this time of year ahead of all sorts of events that we're waiting for in the next couple of months? What is it, Nick, before I go to David?
It's all of the above. So, yeah, the Robin Hooders is now, I think, the colloquial term for day traders, as you said. So I think it's a combination of that. It's a combination of the fact there's now more geared option positions than there are physical underlying shares. I think the ETF market, I know the ETF market is bigger than the underlying share market too. So then you have an underlying share market, which is now dwarfed by the derivatives linked to it and the exchange traded funds linked to it.
Yes.
And I think when you get these wild swings and you get the market makers having to hedge what we call their deltas, you get these big swings sort of exasperated. And I think, it's exactly what you said before you head over to David. It is a thin market with volumes quite narrow. So it just adds to this wild, wild, wild trading. It actually has been quite wild.
David, in your days, I mean, I don't want to go back to the days of the floor and that sort of thing and when you first started, but this is unheard of. What Nick has just said to me, you know, 1% here and then 1% the other way and then 1% again back to where it was in one day. It's extraordinary. I don't know if it's distasteful or if it's disruptive, but this has sort of an unreal feel about it.
I wouldn't take it seriously. I just think we're in that volatile period ahead of the election. There's a lot of uncertainty. I don't know what's behind some of these swings. I don't think they're big volumes. Nick said, you know, I'm just looking at the screen now, and I can't think there's more than 16, 17 billion today, which is pathetically small. You know, and if we start to take out Prosus and we take out Naspers and we take out some of the big gold traders and that, which are perhaps traded by internationals, there's nothing left. So the volumes are extremely thin, and you can swing shares on no more than a few hundred. So if there are day traders, and I'm sure that some of these internet platforms, they're youngsters playing around with a few bob or a few rand, you know, and gearing themselves up and down, and they're squaring themselves throughout the day. Who knows? You know, it's very difficult to read. But if you really want to, with a big money, you could have a lot of fun, you know, pushing shares up and down. So I don't read much into this. You know, in markets which are below 20 billion and that, I don't read a lot into, you know, individual swings, because they can swing backwards and forward each day. And you know, sometimes they 5 or 10%. One day they're down 10%, the next day they're up 10%. So you can't really get a feeling. And Lindsay, if you go to some of the charts, you know, if you go to to dissect what's been happening in the market, you'll see those swings in a very, very, you know, that's why I'm saying it's very difficult to read a trend into our market at this point.
Okay,
want to trade it? Good luck.
Yes, I'm going to trade it, and this is one I want to come to now.
I'm talking the local one.
No, I'm talking local as well. Okay, I'm short the S&P, and I'm staying short the S&P. Mm. I'm long of Investec. Nick, I'll come to you on that one. Where is Investec? Where did Investec close today, please?
So you were the INPs, I think it was, wasn't you? Yes, or INLs, yes. INLs you were.
Yeah, so it was
29.23. It's up 0.8%.
Okay, well, that's good because I'm long at 29.50, so that's not a bad result. I do want to say something, though. The sensitivity of the Rand and the strength of the US dollar has caught my eye, and I want to have a short-term trade on my IG account. I want to sell the Rand. I know it's expensive to do so, but I'm going to do it. It's 16.75, let's call it, and I think there's maybe 30, 40, maybe even 50 basis points one.
So you wanted to, the dollar's the leading currency. So when you quote, if you had to quote to a broker and not on your IG account, you'd quote your dollars. So you always say the start of dollars. So you want to buy dollars.
So. Yeah, it's the dollar rand, exactly. So $1 is 16.74 rand. So I'm going long dollar rand, in other words, and short. Anyway, the point is, I think the rand looks very, very vulnerable to me because it was 16.10 last week. It went to close to 17. I think it was yesterday or the day before. I can't remember. It's been under huge pressure, and there is an extreme sensitivity to the downside. So that's what I'm going to do. Can you note that down in my trading book, please, Nick? And I'll phone the 16, nice people off.
16.7502 is your level.
Thank you very much indeed. And obviously there'll be a bid and offer spread there, but that's what I'm going to do.
Well, it's pretty tight. The rand dollar's pretty tight.
Yeah.
We'll take it at the midpoint, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, that's that. Anything on the Stock Exchange News Service today, David?
I think the big story was the Tonga deal, you know, which is the on-off deal with Barla World over the Starch business.
Thing, yeah.
Which it's quite technical, but Rothschilds was the adjudicator, and they ruled that there was no material adverse change. But that doesn't change the terms, you know. What I mean by that, I mean, it's still a disastrous result at the starch company. And now I think Barlow's have to take up their side of it. I don't know what the price is going to be. I haven't been able to unravel that.
Is
that
5.35 billion? Is the total valuation, yeah.
And in other words, they're saying that what they say about that is that this was with the full knowledge that EBITDA would be down. You know, is that right? I mean, because
that is correct. So Rothschilds came out and said even with EBITDA to be down at least a 17.5% drop was the number. The third party, i.e., Rothschilds, ruled that they still have to go ahead, and it was not sufficient enough to derail the 5.35 billion. Even knowing that drop, it was still they still had to help me hold sort of good on the deal.
Yes, that all came out this morning. Barlow World update on the acquisition of Tongaat Hewlett Starch and withdrawal of cautionary announcement. And Barlow World getting hit by 4.4%, I think it is, David.
Yeah, I think simply because the amount is far more than they wanted to pay. The other one, just the other story is LVMH and Tiffany's, and this is going to court, and somewhere along the line there's going to be a settlement, and I think LVMH is going to have to pay some break fee on this as well. So this is the second deal that's happened during this time that has gone the way of the seller, you know, of the aggrieved party. So and we've still got the Suntum stories and all of those to sort out. So going to be a lot of unraveling of deals and understanding of what this really means.
Just going back to the starch deal we were talking about, Tongaat Hewlett share price up, 15, 16%? I think it was even up 20% at one stage, Nick, today.
Yeah, so but you know, I don't know where I stand on this because one thing is, you know, I grew up in an environment where you kind of, you know, you could do a deal on a handshake. Obviously, we don't live in that environment anymore.
No.
But I mean, if you promise to buy a company and you know, no one could envisage this pandemic, but you literally came in with an offer on a deal in a normal business. And this business, Tongaat Hewlett and starch business, has been going for decades. And it's one of the most profitable parts of Tango Chocolates, and it would have benefited everyone. I just think it just smacked a little bit of just a bad taste in your mouth, but they felt like they wanted to wheel out some legal jargon and pull out. So I might be leaning more towards Tango on this. I think they, rightly so, they should have been sold.
Not to mention
the fact that, I mean, they've had a torrid time, so it's not as if they're trying a fast one. They're just trying to prepare their balance sheet and get the best price for their shareholders.
Now, I agree with you. It's really the history of this whole pandemic, that there's so many people who've been damaged and hurt by this, and it wasn't their fault. I don't think this had anything to do with the starch business. And you're right.
No,
I think
exactly. And
they should have sat around
a
table
away
and said,
you guys, whoever you're listening out there, you could have dealt with this better, I thought.
Mm. Yes. Well,
they come out with egg on their face, and they come out with their reputation tarred a little and beaten up. Yeah, Deirdre, I agree.
Okay.
I think that's going to happen with the insurance companies as well.
I also do.
You know, I don't think, regardless of what the letter of the law is, you know, regardless, and I'm sure that there's going
but
to be some.
But isn't it, you know the jargon, David? I mean, letter of the law and the spirit of the law.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The spirit
of
the law now is be very careful. It's difficult to quantify reputational risk in a small market. Be very careful.
Yeah, exactly.
Dollar rand is 16.76 now. The British pound against the rand is 21.32. The euro rand is 19.60. And the euro dollar is 116.95. This is a big move because it was 119 four trading days ago, I think it was. So we've had 200 plus basis points strengthening of the US dollar, weakening of the euro. The gold price has suffered very badly. I always get the closing price different on my screen to yours, Nick, but it's 18.99, the gold price. The platinum price is 864. So tell us how much that is down on the day, and also give us palladium, if you would.
Yeah, so your handles are right. You've just somehow got, I don't even know, you're trading off the CME, you've got something wrong there, but the feed's not working properly. But you are right. So sitting at 1900 on gold, so that's down $8 or 0.45%. Platinum's the worst fairing. It's down 1%, $9.
Yeah.
And then palladium, about the same. It's called a 0.85, down $18. So continuing the sell-off the big sell-off that we saw yesterday.
And the oil price is ignoring all of that volatility because it's flat. The West Texas is $39.28 per barrel, and Brent crude oil is $41.60. It's a short week, David. That will, of course, add to the thin markets and to the volatility because no one will come in on Friday, that's for sure.
Not yet. Not in South Africa.
Definitely not. Apart from Nick.
We'll be trading globally, but I mean, I don't know about South Africa. I don't know. I also find it very difficult to trade the market at the moment. I still think there are issues ahead. And the longer this pandemic continues, the longer we stay in lockdown. I'm just, Mnuchin and Powell are testifying to the House at the moment. I think Mnuchin says full economic recovery, just a question of time. So I'm not sure what his views are. I haven't heard it. But, it's taking longer, Lindsay. And I think the longer it takes, you're going into Europe's going into partial lockdown. Yes. Certainly, you know, I heard Boris Johnson talking. This is
a shocking statement.
Badly handled.
It seems so bizarre that I've got a good feel of sort of sense of trepidation in South Africa that we've gone to level one and slowly getting back to business. Yeah. And I couldn't wait to get back to my desk and my little kids going back to school next week. And we feel like we're getting back. Yeah. And you see these headlines with them talking about locking down the UK for another six months.
I know.
It's like, my goodness me, sell the pound. Are we missing a trick here? Or maybe we're just being naive with this pandemic. I don't know.
I think that the naivety comes from the leaders. I mean, Boris Johnson and his band of merry men and women have really handled it badly. They're headless chickens. It's appalling what they've done.
In fact, I heard comment today that for the first time, there's a chance that that Labour could give them a challenge, you know, despite the fact that they were wiped out in the last election. And that was because of Jeremy Corbyn.
Corbyn, of course.
But but in this case, there's a strong chance of Labour making some progress against them. This is not this is not as easy for them as it was. So I think there's quite a bit of opposition building up to Boris Johnson. He always talks eloquently. He's an extremely good talker, but When it comes down to the pure politics and the UK, I think there's a lot of concerns.
There was a wonderful FT article that was about 2 days ago doing the rounds with a headline like, it was the opinion piece on the FT, and it said, well, the headline was, Boris Johnson has not lost his right in front of you. And basically everyone was saying, like, where's the usual Boris Johnson? It used to be a laughter and used to be sort of a bit fun. Yeah. They said, but the way they worded it was very, very good. As he says, they said, a few headlines here, says, Mr. Johnson now looks like a Labrador adopted by pit bulls.
Yeah.
He says, goes on to say, his aides are permanent campaigners addicted to wedge politics and theirs is divide. He says, where are the wise counselors telling them that threatening to break international law will not play well? The answer there comes to aides and ministers, all but the most loyal are ignored or purged, except for Mr. Johnson's Brexit negotiator, who is a former ambassador to Denmark and the executive of the Scotch Whiskey Association. This is David Frost.
Okay.
But it's a really good article and saying they complete these almost like asleep at the wheel here. What's going on?
If you wanted to go for a drink with any politician, you would go with Boris Johnson. He would sit down, he would tell you stories about Eton and Oxford or wherever he went or wherever he was educated, etc. But I think he's out of his depth now. And I'm not saying that anybody isn't out of their depth because they don't know how to behave and they don't know whether to lock down or whether not to lock down. But the smaller country seems to be doing much better. Obviously, New Zealand and Sweden comes to mind as well. But are these viable models for larger countries like the United Kingdom, densely populated countries? Yeah,
The one sentence I love from the FT article from yesterday, it says the UK Prime Minister seems to have lost his fizz and a sense of humour. It says it was all meant to be such fun. There'd be cocktails at Chequers, hilarious nose tweaking of progressives, and the bellowing of Brussels sucks as they roared down the Freedom Highway like Mr. Toad in his new car.
Yeah.
Where is the old Boris?
Yeah, anyway. It's called being Prime Minister.
I think it's not fun running a country. It's not fun running anything today. You know, the old days of with your CEO exactly, and I would take you out for drinks. Today, there's so much compliance. There's so much social media on you all the time, and there's such complicated political issues. It's not fun, and you need administrators. You need dull, boring administrators, people who enjoy the kind of stuff that goes, you know, that can sit through meetings and go through pages and pages of deals and laws and everything. So, and that's where I think even Trump comes unstuck. He has no idea what's happening. You know, he's the last. I don't think he has any. He flip-flops as he's done on the Oracle deal now. I don't know what today's view is. But yesterday it was all go. Today it's not all go, you know, because he wants control. He doesn't want ByteDance. So you don't know where he is. He's clueless. And that's the problem. We've got so many of these kind of leaders who just think it's fun to be, you know, I'm going to stand for presidency, you know, and then gets in there and says, well, I don't really want to go through the minutes. I don't really want to read all these security pages or go through the newspapers and try to find out what's happening to our allies or our enemies. It's just not fun. I'd rather watch Netflix or play golf.
Fox TV.
Fox TV, yeah.
Today on the upside, we had Pepcor up 2.8%. I may be a few minutes delayed here, but I think these are the closing prices. Yeah. I've got First Round up 2.7%, Woolies up 2.5%, British American Tobacco up 2.5% as well, and Naspers up 2.4%. On the downside, Hammerson down nearly 15%. Look at that thing go. Impala Platinum down 7%, Exxaro down 5.5%, and Barlow World down 4.2%. David, I have to go to the property sector. Because I think it was Nick and I. Nick, were we talking about property this morning? I think we were. Or maybe it was yesterday. I don't know. But anyway,
you've been
very cautious, David, about a property. It's had a torrid 48 hours.
It's had a torrid year. It's had a torrid 12 months.
Yes.
And I think what's coming through is that all the companies are now having a look at their cash flows and certainly not in a position to pay out any kind of distribution. And that's why you buy property. You get it for the yield. You know, you don't buy it for the pretty windows or for whatever reason. You buy it because you get rent. And the problem is that Owning property today has become an absolute disaster because you've had to give rent holidays to tenants, you know, to help them get through. And so it goes. And renewing leases is not going to be like we've always done renewal of leases now at inflation plus, you know, it was built into the lease. So this has become very, very difficult. And companies like Vukile, Hyprop, Resilient are down within the year 60-70%.
Well, Hammerson's down 81% yet.
This year? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if you looked at Hyprop this morning, you mentioned Hyprop, David. I tried to go through the numbers this morning. They really don't hold any cards right now. The tenants hold everything. No. They're all having to renegotiate the leases. They have to come up with some clever indications of how they're going to, you know, pay a share of the revenues, etc. I mean, that model, that traditional bricks and mortar mall model for now is certainly turned on its head.
You probably got some of the regional shopping centers, you know, where they're very small shopping centers.
Like little strip malls or something.
Exactly, service a small community, out in the rural areas and that. Those can probably survive. But, you know what I've learned, with property as well, with some of these large malls. Say, for example, you've got Edgar's and you've got Pick and Pay and you've got all the big Mr. Price. If one of the large tenants goes, you also have the right to go as well. So a lot of the old leases were like this. In other words, we'll stay
like a strong anchor tenant and they left, the smaller guys can go as well.
That's dead right. Not only smaller guys, other similar type of tenants as well. So it puts the landlord under a lot of pressure. At the moment, probably some of the leases have still got time to run. But as they come to an end, you're going to find it very difficult to renew at the same kind of levels. And this is the problem. So they had their glorious decade in which property shares here really dominated our market.
But they were like front page of the Financial Mail every other week. Mm. They were the hot stocks on the JSE.
Mm. And now it's quite tragic to see where they are. And you don't have to do anything. You know, these are quasi bonds. What's the 10-year leases? Well, I mean, 10-year yields are about 9% or something.
I think we spoke about this before, and I don't think we came to a conclusion. It's like, you know, listed as REITs under the current tax structures and stuff. If you're not paying distribution, you know, where does it leave that whole tax structure too? Mm. So there's a lot of unanswered questions for how these guys are going to be positioned going forward.
Gentlemen, let's have a look at the closing prices today and on the JSE, and then we'll go to the US futures, which are all over the place. They're more or less flat at the moment. But Nick Kunz, over to you for the closing JSE indices, please.
Okay, JSE indices today. And again, like we said this morning, it actually felt a lot worse than it was. We did unfortunately close the all share down just 50 points, 0.1%, which means that this is the sixth day in a row that the JSE has been down. 53,265, top 40, 26 points down, only 5 pips, but 49,126 again, the sixth day down in a row for the top 40. And individual indices, utilities are not a bad day, up 3%, technology up 2.1%, that'll be your process. Healthcare, 0.6%, firm, and financials bouncing back a little bit after yesterday. So these banks up 0.5%. On the downside, basic materials down 1.49%, energy shares down 2.25%, and real estate, we need no explanation on that one, down 2.39%.
And the value traded?
Value traded was low. It was 17.8 billion, so less than 18, which we got yesterday. So it's been trickling low the last few days.
And keep an eye on what's happening in Europe as well. I mean, we've spoken about Britain maybe locking down for six months, but that can change any day. Look at the Netherlands. The Netherlands does things in a more orderly, liberal way. I mean, their bars now have to close at 12 o'clock instead of 1 o'clock in the morning. They have to close at midnight now. So they've shaved an hour off your drinking time. But they also, David, you'll appreciate this one. They allowed a third of each football stadium to be filled by supporters that have season tickets. And so the loyal supporters were allowed to go in. And Feyenoord were playing a team called FC 20 on Sunday, I think it was. And they were allowed 13,000 people in the stadium, and they all had to sit at physical distances and all that sort of thing. And they weren't allowed to sing. But no, they weren't. You're not allowed to sing. You just sit there and be quiet. And be like a good boy and good girl. You sit there and you don't say anything. But when the FC 20
had masks on,
yeah, of course. FC 20 equalised, and all the fans, the 13,000, all went to one end of the stadium and started singing to get the team going. It was very funny. And Mark Rutte, the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, he was absolutely furious, and he used an expletive, and he said, "Fine, all fans, shut the up." and that experiment has now been cancelled because of Feyenoord fans. But anyway,
yeah,
interesting times.
I mean, that's the stupidity of soccer.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's the stupidity of soccer fans.
Especially Feyenoord fans. No, they're rough chaps. Great fun, but rough. Anyway, gentlemen.
But that's the end of everything for, you know, that's the end for soccer fans.
Well,
because of that.
I think they're banning it again. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening. That was David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, accompanied by Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was brought to you by IG, a global leader in online trading and authorized financial services provider. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.